You want to go ahead and talk? Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. Do it. You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. TheWordBros.com.
He's always been super nice. That's why I knew he was going to do it, because he's always been nice online. He says, I love doing podcasts, is what he said when I asked him. Like, if I didn't have SDCC, I'd be there. I do it. I do the podcast. I was like, okay, that's cool.
Kevin is speaking about a dude that has produced, whether he's writing, editing, just kind of overseeing 1,000 comic books. The dude's been making comics since 1995. He was one of the dudes kind of on the ground floor at Image Comics. He was like that next wave of guys. Today on the podcast, we're talking to Top Cow's COO, Matt Hawkins. And welcome to the Word Bros Podcast. My name is Bob. Hello.
And I'm Kevin. How you guys doing?
And I think we're just gonna jump right in with this thing today, man, because Matt went on for a pretty long time and he's got a lot of really awesome stuff to say. He's by far our highest profile guest. I mean, the guy runs Top Cow. I mean, like, just some of the stuff that he talks about is insane. And so, like, I don't want to wait in. I don't want to, like, reflect on it because you haven't listened to it. I just want to get right to it. Let's get down to the brass tacks of it. So without any further ado, that's a lot of fucking comics.
Yeah, that and he said they made the most money ever at 25. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, me too, though.
So. What a house.
Yeah, I did. I bought a lot of alcohol. So let's get to Matt Hawkins. All right, today on Word Bros, we are joined by a man who has created, according to your Top Cow biography, over 1,000 comics.
Good lord.
1,000. Like, that's crazy. Yeah.
It's impressive.
Well, I haven't written all of those. I've only written probably 200 or 300. I mean, I've edited hundreds of other books and produced and published. And so I've been part of Image since April of 93.
But I like how you're trying to downplay, like, now I've only written like 500 of those things. I didn't write all of them. That's crazy. We're joined today by Matt Hawkins. Hello, Matt. It's a pleasure to have you on Word Bros.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's an honor. I love podcasts. I actually wanted to record one on my own on science and religion, but I actually hated the way I sounded. So I recorded 2 or 3 episodes with my wife just for fun, and then I killed it. So.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So you're not a fan of your own voice then? Nobody is, though. That's the thing about this whole business.
Yeah, I just, you know, when I went on to Audible, or not Audible, or whatever it was, the audio thing on the Mac to figure it out, I was like, oh my God. It annoyed me so much that I just couldn't do it, and I gave it up. I was just doing it for fun anyway, because I love podcasts, you know?
Now, in your head, who do you think you sounded like? When you were talking on the microphone, you're like, wow, I sound like blank. Who do you think you sounded like?
I don't know, something a little manlier. I don't know.
I have the same problem.
Ving Rhames or something, you know, and I come out like that guy that does the bird voices on Aladdin. I remember that guy's name.
Gilbert Gottfried,
yeah. When I hear my voice, I'm like, I hear it like that. So I feel like I'm listening to it. But then when I hear my voice, I'm like, hello there. How are you?
Say this. In defense of Gilbert Gottfried, that dude has made a lot of money doing voiceover. So you could sound someone worse, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. No, that's not for me.
So tell us, how are things at Top Cow? What are you working on now? How are things going over there?
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
It's going really well. You know, we just got back from San Diego Comic-Con, and that is a fatigue fest, man. By the time 5 days of that shit, you know, 100,000 people rolling through there, it's you come home Sunday, and it takes 2 or 3 days to recover. Half my office always gets sick. Every year we get what we affectionately call the con crud, and so half the people are – you know, sick and out. And so it almost takes a week to recover, you know, and I'm pushing 50 now, so I'm not some spring chicken. It's harder now for me than it's ever been. You know what I mean?
You're 50. You look great. You look amazing for your age. When you got up, you had that tight black t-shirt on showing off your guns, dude.
I'm 48. I'm not 50 yet. Don't age me yet.
You're close. You're getting close. That's how I feel. I'm 30. I'm 39, but I tell everybody I'm 40.
Oh, right on. So I have two teenage kids and I got my wife's 33. So I'm surrounded by youth and millennials. It's nutty.
It keeps you young, man.
It definitely does. But today I was working on a project called Sugar. I'm actually working right now on 7 different things at the same time.
Wow,
weird. I'm working on Cyberforce, which we're relaunching at the end of this year to do a nice 2 or 3 year run on that, which Attila Rojo is drawing, the guy I worked on Samaritan with. He also did the second volume of Ninth Generation with me. We followed up Stefan Sejic on that. What else am I working on? Sugar is a companion book to Sunstone. It's like that. We have Sunstone, then Bloodstain, which is Linda Sedgwick's book. I'm doing another book called Swing with Linda Sedgwick, which is another sort of sex subculture, erotic kind of fiction, slice of life thing. Sugar is another one in that category. Sunstone was such a massive success for us. It's been the most successful and the best sales of any book we've had in many years. And
wow.
So problem was we didn't have anything else in that category, you know. So the slice of life romantic fiction comedy kind of stuff, I gotta tell you, going from writing like The Tithe, Think Tank, to writing something like that was a shock to the system. And I gotta tell you, I have a newfound respect for those people that write that romantic fiction stuff, because fuck, it's hard to do. I mean, I that slice of life, you know, you have a MIG shooting down a dragon, that's pretty easy to make cool, right? You know, you got a girl at a restaurant fighting with a guy over, you know, how he disrespected her. You know, I mean, that's fucking hard to make interesting, you know? So I had a really hard time, and I really had to leverage the Sedgwicks, because on the first draft of Swing, which Linda is drawing, I mean, I did 8 drafts of that script. It's the most of any script I've ever done.
Holy smokes.
Because I kept rewriting it. And the first issue I wrote, which is 22 pages, is actually 68 pages now. And we decided to go straight to an original graphic novel with the whole thing. So it'll be a 128-page book as it comes out. Because a lot of the stuff with science fiction, you can sort of shorthand it. And a lot of my books, I'll be like, like at the beginning of Terminator, shit happens. The fucking apocalypse. You know, you shorthand some shit and you're into it, you know. You don't need to build up, and then you sort of throw the characters into the mix. I mean, in the sort of romantic stuff, you got to make people care about the characters, you know, before you fuck with them.
Yes.
So they kept telling me to go. I had such a hard time for a long time, and then Cedric and I got on Skype, and he told me, go watch the first 10 minutes of the Pixar movie Up like 10 times in a row, just the first 10 minutes.
Okay.
And then go and try to write it again. And so I did that literally. I sat down and watched it for about an hour. I didn't do it 10 times. I did it 4 or 5 times. Went and rewrote it, and then I sent it to him, and I got to give the guy credit. It was a great note, and it was very helpful. And the final draft of what it is, I'm very proud of. I mean, Sunstone, if you don't know what it is kind of 50 Shades of Gay. He hates it that I call it that, but it's a shorthand people get. It's two lesbian girls that meet each other, fall in love, and they're into ethnic together, and they have sort of this interesting relationship, and Sunstone is their safe word. People that are into this S&M stuff are very – they love Sunstone. They hate 50 Shades of Grey. I mean, everyone that's come up to me at the booth that's into that is actually authentically into that sort of a lifestyle. They hate 50 Shades of Grey because they see it as this sort of rapey, controlling, weird thing. If you really get into S&M, and I personally not into S&M, but it's about trust. No, it really is about trust. You know, I mean, you have to trust your partner and it just completely. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. So, and I've talked to a lot of these people, and they come up and they talk about how much they love Sunstone. But, I love Think Tank, and I talk about it all the time. It's my favorite book I do. But I brag about how Think Tank Volume 1 is in. Hey, it still seems sexy. I love it. But Think Tank Volume 1 is in the third printing, right?
Wow.
Which is kind of an honor. But the first printing of Sunstone sold more than all 3 of those combined.
Oh, man. Well, to be fair, sex sells. So it's hard to kind of compete with that.
You also said that on Think Tank, it says this book will make you smarter. People don't want to be smarter necessarily. They want to be sexier.
Yeah, that's true. No, it is true. And I think the key is, you know, there's a lot of people that are into that kind of a lifestyle, you know, and a lot more than you'd think. I mean, the one thing, the reason why I did Swing as the second volume is because when I started doing all this research on sexual subcultures, there's in Los Angeles alone, there's two S&M clubs. There's six swinging clubs.
Interesting.
So, and I started, and so my wife and I went and, you know, staked them out and kind of checked them out. And it was pretty fascinating and talked to some people and hung out. And it really is an interesting world. So we're doing a book called Swing. And then as a part of that, because I was in that mindset, I started developing another book called Sugar, which is about sort of a sugar baby, sugar daddy relationship. And kind of a modern day pretty woman, really, is what it is. But you got to make things interesting. It's a different sexual subcultures. And for us, I figured out the way to make sugar interesting is it's the first time the guy's done it. It's the first time the girl's done it. But they do enter into some sort of relationship like that. But they end up, you know, going through turmoil and they stay together, of course. You know,
interesting.
So it's been a lot of fun. I mean, it's been a pretty broad departure for me. But, you know, we've done some Amazon pre-orders, and that Swing book is going to 10 times sell, I think, take book sales.
That's all. See, and it's cool. I can tell that you're a pro and you've done a million of these interviews, because every question that I want to ask as a follow-up, you're asking yourself and answering them. So I'm just on cruise control here, Matt. You do what you want, baby. Oh. This is your world, Daddy. Because I was going to ask you, how do you go from writing a book like Think Tank to doing a book that you described yourself as like a modern day pretty woman? Like, how do you turn that part of your brain on?
It's I got to be honest, it's really hard. And a lot of it for me is I listen to different types of music, and I find movies that I like that are in that genre, and I will watch them before I go write. Like, you know, back when I was doing Cyberforce, for whatever reason, I would go back and rewatch Tron Legacy, you know, and because that caught me into a weird techie, kind of a weird techie mode. And even though I don't necessarily love that movie, it sort of just clicked in my head. And maybe it was the Daft Punk soundtrack, or was it Daft Punk? That soundtrack, I really like that soundtrack. And so I would watch that movie kind of in the background while I'd be doing some other stuff, surfing the internet or whatever. And then, you know, so different books, I listen to different types of music, and I watch different types of things to get myself in the mode. And then, yeah, you know, and for me, it's really about just getting in that headspace. In the first few hours, the first day is always a transitional day. Cause like, earlier this week I was working on Symmetry Volume 3. Yesterday I was working on Sugar. Today I was working on, you know, Cyberforce. So, you got to kind of shift around. And I am, just so you know, I am writing a Think Tank novel. I've realized
awesome.
That the audience for that type of a book, like a Tom Clancy-esque kind of Michael Crichton kind of thing, is significantly higher in prose than it is in graphic novels and comics. And I just have always been in comics. I've been in comics since 93. So I've been working with a couple guys I know, and I've got a couple friends and an editor over at Tor. So I'm going to see if they'll put it out for me.
That'd be
great. Yeah. So. Now I had a question. I saw that you guys were using Kickstarter as a platform, and there was an internet response to that, and I liked what you said. So if people didn't hear it, if you don't mind reiterating what you were saying about that with Golgotha, the Kickstarter for that, and I thought that was a really cool response you had about that.
In terms of the people that were complaining?
Yeah, because they were complaining that you guys shouldn't use Kickstarter as a platform, and there was a lot of criticism, right. and then you answered that, and I liked what your answer was. I was like, oh, that's a really clever answer. So.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, it's just, you know, usually the answers are easier to remember when they're true. But the for us, Kickstarter was really, it's just an alternative distribution platform, you know, right. And the direct market does not support original graphic novels, and the direct market and comic book stores do not support a lot of stuff that's not sort of a traditional format comic that they're used to, and they don't take a lot of risks. And I don't blame them, actually. There's 2,000 products a month they've got to order blind. And it's being a comic book retailer is a very hard job. I personally wouldn't want to do it, you know. So I have a lot of respect for these guys. But a book like Golgotha, the direct market is not going to support. And most of the people that bitched at us about the Kickstarter were other smaller creators that wanted to do Kickstarters. And I'm like, you know, fuck off. You know, seriously, go fuck yourself. You know, I mean, it's not like you own the goddamn platform. It's within the rules of Kickstarter that we did it. We had their blessing. They made our project a... I don't remember what it was. A recommended
it's a favorite, or, like a favorite.
A favorite. Yeah. So, I mean, they were behind us on the project, you know? And so when people get in my face about that stuff, I'm like, you know what? Fuck off. So that's probably not as PC as what I said in the internet.
No. You don't need to be PC here, man. Fuck them. That's what I say. You know?
The reason why I was asking is because as you know, Bob and I both made comics through Kickstarter. So it was one of those things where we were like, when I read it, I told him, I was like, I like his response to that, because it's really funny, because it's basically like people griping, like they're taking up something, like there's only a certain amount of people who are going to back a Kickstarter. It's almost like what people say when you play D&D. Well, you only have a certain amount of 20s in that dice. Yeah,
right.
What?
That's funny. That's so funny you mentioned D&D, because I literally, right before working on my campaign, I'm playing on Sunday.
Oh, nice.
I run a game. So
that's very just, cool. right now I am playing a Pathfinder game. I'm playing a 4th edition game, which is just, no offense, I'm just kind of over 4th edition. I'm waiting for Starfinder to come out. Have you heard about Starfinder?
No, I haven't actually played in 30 years.
Really? This is your first go?
Yeah, 5e, I'm running a game, and I've kind of gotten obsessed with it. I've bought all these Dwarven Forge things. Have you ever seen these things?
Yes, they're like, awesome. They're expensive, though.
Yeah, these little beds and tables.
It's a grown man dollhouse, is what you're saying.
Yeah. You can make, like, little
dungeons. Yeah, dungeons. Those things look cool.
Run the miniatures through them and stuff. And so
that's awesome.
I've gotten a little obsessive about it. It's been fun, though.
Because Bobby's going to Gen Con soon.
I'm going to Gen Con because I'm based out of Cincinnati, so I'm going to take.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You want to see something really cool?
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
You're like a prop comic. This is amazing.
I'm really proud of this. That's my the map I made for my world.
Look at that.
That's awesome.
So, I don't know if you see that. Like this thing. It's like human areas. This is the elves. This is the dwarves. There's orcs down here, and there's another human area. I like the idea of doing islands to where it's more important that, you're shipping and naval. So
that's exactly what I was going to say about your map. I was going to say, I dig the map because there's a lot of water.
And I said that to him on, Facebook. I was like, you're going to need to swim and navigate.
Yeah. So here's like the mermaid cities and there's the Sahagwin cities and there'll be a war underwater. So having fun of it. I actually created a bunch of factions for Renown and this whole world. I mean, I've spent fucking months and months and months on this. It should be fun because all the people I'm playing with are writers. All the players. It's Brian Hill, Dan Wickline, another guy named Mark, who you guys wouldn't know. He's not in comic business. But and then my wife, who writes Swing and stuff with me.
That's awesome.
But it should be fun.
Now what can the players expect from Matt Hawkins, the DM? Like, what's the first
president of Top Cow, COO, Dungeon Master? Gosh, well, I mean, this guy doesn't sleep.
Well, I the world I created is sort of like a religious war. Like the main human area. So the whole concept of the world I created was 350 years ago. There was an invasion by drow and demons that worked together, like Lolth. Or what's her name? The spider demon spider god. And Orcus, that god, one of the abyssal. There was this massive invasion into the world. So all the races had to work together to fight them off. And that was 350 years ago. And there was this group of adventurers, which have been called the Five. And it's five adventurers. They, in theory, they've all died, but they sort of created the modern world because they got everyone together to fight off this invasion. And one of the people that lived was this cleric, was the main guy behind this thing. And he was a human. And when he went back to his world, he built the city that the characters start in. And he sort of created the fact that there's this order of the sun, that the sun god is the one true god. And all the other gods are lesser than. So people that worship the other gods. So now the humans are trying to wipe out all the other gods. And people of faith have tried to absorb it. So it's kind of this religious war thing. So it's kind of fun.
Why do I have a feeling that you're also going to start writing like game mods soon? Like you just have this energy, man. Like you're just pumped about it. It's really good to see.
That's awesome.
Well, I know Ted Adams real well, the guy who runs IDW, and I know they have the D&D license. So I actually told him what I was doing, and he said I should turn it into a graphic novel. So I probably will do that.
That's awesome.
Get the characters and do it.
And then what you can do is write everything off. All these things that you're buying, your little mini beds and your mini tables. It's all a write off then.
I'm already writing it off. So. Yeah, it's all research, baby. You know,
you should teach a class. That's fantastic. Now you guys are getting ready. You guys are gearing up for your Top Cow contest again. You guys doing that this year? Yes.
Yes, the Top Cow Talent Hunt. The first due date. Well, the due date is December 15th. So
okay.
That's the date to turn in the. So everyone's got plenty of time to do it. As an artist, you need to do, I think, 5 or 6 pages, sequential art of one of the things. As a writer, you have to turn in a full 20 to 22 page full script But you've still got months to do it. We had an early deadline of August 15th. For anyone that turns it in by August 15th, we will actually provide some feedback so that they can then go back and adjust it. And on both the art and on the writing. And I judge the writing and Silvestri judges the art. So it's wow. a lot of the artists come and ask me for tips. I'm like, I don't fucking know shit. I can't draw. That's the one thing I love about Silvestri is the guy is just a masterclass at art, you know, and he can look at all these art. The reason why Mark has found so many young, talented artists like Mike Turner, Dave Finch, Billy Tan, Mike Choi. I mean, you go through this list of all these famous artists today, and a lot of them were guys that Silvestri plucked out of the ether, you know. Mm-hmm. And you look at all these guys' original submissions, and I still have some of them. They suck. And these are people I would not have personally have hired. Mike Turner, I would not have hired. His submission was god-awful. So was Dave Finch. But Silvestri saw their work, saw the diamond in the rough, and said, no, we need these guys. And I looked at it, and I'm like, okay. So it's interesting. I mean, I can look at art. I've done this long enough where I can look at art and say, this guy or this girl, they're professional. I can work with this guy or this girl. I would love to work with them personally. You know, that's mm-hmm. easy for me to do. Someone that needs a little training, that's out of my wheelhouse. I can't do it.
That's fantastic. So, yeah, I had a friend last year who was in the Top Cow Talent Hunt, and I was really impressed by the fact that you guys, he turned in the script soon enough, and you guys actually did give him, like, honest feedback. That was really impressive, and I thought that was very cool. That must take, I mean, weeks to do that, because, I mean, think about all the ones that come in early. Or does it not take that long at all?
No, it takes a couple days. I mean, it's not as many as you'd think. I think we get 300 or 400 of the writer submissions and 400 or 500 of the artist submissions. Ryan, myself, and Elaine, and we crank through the writer ones. What I end up doing is we'll just go to bang them out really. And then, Ryan will actually type up the responses. So oh, I don't cool. actually, that's the time consuming part is actually physically typing up the responses. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, so I don't actually do that. I'm like, oh, this guy needs to work on his structure. This guy needs to work on this. You know, this is just boring as fuck. You know I mean? It's usually conveyed to people in a nicer way.
I hope so. But sometimes, you know, sometimes you need to hear that, hey, this is boring.
It's boring as fuck. Yeah. You need to hear it. It will help you get better.
Yeah. No, the problem, I think, you know, the biggest thing I would say to most up and coming creators is first, it's a hell of a lot harder than you think it is to break into this industry. I think people have this weird notion that it's easy. And I run into these people all the time. And do you guys have any idea how many working professional comic book writers there are that get paid to do this for a living?
I don't want to know.
I would guess like 50, maybe 50.
No, there's about 300. 300. Okay. 300. There's 1,200 people in the NFL.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, you know, there's like, you know, so, I mean, when you compare that, I mean, statistically, you have a better chance of being a National Football League player than you do for writing comic books. And I think, you know, when you start thinking of that, I think maybe people should have a little more respect for the people that do it. But no, it's just, it always amazes me when I'm in a comic book store and, you know, and a lot of the Marvel and DC zombies, that's all they read. They don't know who I am. So I can go in there and overhear their conversations and they'll talk about, oh, I can write this better than this guy. And that's just not that easy, you know, especially corporate comics, you know, dealing with editors and being told what to do, which is why I don't do it.
I would love to see that. Like just you swoop in. Well, tell me your idea. I can see the little devil horns pop out of your forehead.
I don't engage anymore. I just listen. I generally find engaging people is a waste of time because people don't want generally people don't want feedback. They want affirmation or validation, or they want a job. You know,
they want a pat on the back. I see what you're saying. Yeah, they want a pat on the back. They don't want general honest feedback. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get that all the time where people will come up and ask me what I think of this, and I'm stupid enough that I'll usually tell them. I've pissed some people off. I've had people block me on Facebook, and I'm like, you know what? Some people just need a dose of reality. The artists are the worst, by the way, because here's the problem with artists. If you're like a small town person and you grow up in the art program, and let's say you're from, I don't know, some small town in Kansas, you know, mm-hmm. Your school thinks you're the shit. Your grandma thinks you're the shit. You got her. She's got your art all over her house, you know? So then you go and you know, you go to some sort of liberal arts art program at some, you know, shitty school in Kansas. And then this person's like, I'm ready, world. Where's my job? And they suck. And that happens so often where you'll see submissions from these people and they're kind of arrogant about it, mm-hmm. you know, and they're not good at all, you know. And I can't tell you, like I said, this is my 25th year in this business, and I have seen tens of thousands of artists that have just come and gone wistfully. You know, every year I'll see 100 new people at San Diego Comic Con. About 90% of them I'll never hear from again, you know. Oh, wow. And it's I don't know. You know, what can you do?
Well, since you're so honest, I just want to take the time to thank you for always being nice to me online, because if it wasn't for Matt being nice, I probably wouldn't be writing comics now. He's like, oh, well, it seems like he can tell a story, so, man, you should go for it. That was really cool of him. He could have been like, man, you fucking suck.
And it sounds like, it sounds like he would, so that's really great.
Well, I don't ever say it like that. I'm generally a nice person. I think you guys caught me on a feisty night.
Dude, I'll take you on a feisty night. Whatever you're drinking, keep at it, buddy. It's awesome.
But I try to be nice to people, and I try to be positive. I mean, I wasn't always actually. I've become much more positive as I've gotten older, which is kind of weird because everyone tells me it's usually the opposite. And I've become much more relaxed and about so many things, you know. I was raised a right-wing conservative Christian kid. Mm. And flash forward 35 years.
Bondage comics.
No, and I'm a left wing, you know, I'm a lefty now, and I've made almost a full weird switch. I went from a right wing conservative Christian kid to a left wing atheist. That's awesome. in 40 years, you know, and to the consternation of my parents, you know, so it is what it is. My mom continues to have the Blue Haired Old Ladies Club pray for me every day.
That's nice that she still cares enough.
That's sweet of her, though.
I know.
I hope my son's bondage comic sells gangbusters. Amen. What the fuck? So let me ask you a question. Do you have a copy of the first script that you ever wrote? Like, do you have a copy of that thing floating around somewhere? And if you do you remember the first book you ever wrote? Like the first comic you ever sat down and started writing?
Yeah, it was Lady Pendragon number one in 1995.
Which I found that recently. I found it.
Oh, really?
I found the trade. Like, I couldn't find the actual issues. I went looking for them. Couldn't find those, but I found a trade. So that was
the first book you ever wrote? Like, that was the first, like, time you attempted to write a comic script? That was it?
Yeah, it was Lady Pendragon number one. The first book back in 1995.
That's awesome.
It was part of it was came out from Maximum Press, which was one of Rob Liefeld's studios companies back then. And then I did a lot of shit. I did Six String Samurai, which is a one-shot comic based on a film. When Awesome Comics went down, I was jobless, and I almost went back into the science world. I started applying actually to some research and tech jobs, and I was pretty close to just getting sucked back into the world of research science. And then Larry Martyr called me and said, hey, that Lady Pendragon book you did at Maximum, do you own that? I'm like, yeah, it was mine. And he's like, you know, if you want to do that at Image, I'd do it with you. And I'm like, really? So then I did 18 issues over 2 years of Lady Pendragon at Image Central when Larry Martyr was running it. We also did a book called Alley Cat, which was based on that Playboy lingerie model. Story for another day. And then based on the success of Lady Pendragon, Top Cow hired me. And I started there in April of 98. I mean, I started at Extreme in April of 93. I started at Top Cow in April of 98. And I've been at Top Cow ever since. And I wrote a series of video game adaptations. I did not write a lot of comics from 1990 to 2000. Oh, wait, no. 2000? Yeah, 2000 to 2010. I don't think I wrote very many comics. I did work on two seasons of the Power Rangers. I wrote a bunch of episodes for that. My buddy was the showrunner, and he asked me if I would Power Rangers SPD. He asked me if I would do one just for fun, and I did it. And then they asked me to keep writing more and more and more freelance. It was fun. So I did 18 episodes, got me in the Writers Guild, pays a lot of money. I mean, writing TV pays a lot of fucking money. I mean, the reason why I didn't keep doing it is because honestly, writing TV is a grind, they treat you like shit. So I like working in comics because honestly, I love what I'm doing now because I kind of get to do, you know, whatever the fuck I want. So
interesting.
You know, no one really tells me what to do. The only people that ever tell me what to do are market and economic forces, you know, like the book doesn't sell. on to the next one.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's it's kind of fun.
That's interesting. So you've seen this business from its tippy top, I mean, the peak of the industry down to the very bottom. You've seen this thing almost bottom out. Like, I guess, did you see the comments over the weekend at San Diego Comic-Con about how the industry is in danger?
Whatever.
That's all. That's the quote.
That's all horse. That's all horse.
Whatever.
That's all. You know, and Jim Lee actually went online and said he never actually said that.
Okay.
So some of that was misconstrued. Okay. I don't know what was said in terms of what context. I saw the reports of it, and then I saw Jim Lee go on Twitter and say he never said that.
Okay.
So I don't know actually what was said. Is the comic book industry in some problem? Yeah, it always has been, though. I mean, when I started in 93, there were 10,000 stores. Now there's about 1,500, you know. So the retail base is significantly smaller than it once was. But there's way more opportunities. I mean, we make almost half our revenue now direct and selling at convention. You know, I mean, that's why you see me touring so much, because that's where so much of our revenue comes from. You know, and because the problem with the comic book industry is people don't go online. Most people right. don't look for shit. They walk into the store and see what's out, and they have a few things they've pre-ordered. And then they'll walk around and look at whatever's there, and they'll ask the guy behind the counter what's new, or they'll talk to their friends, their little close-knit group. The vast majority of people don't go to CBR. They don't go to, you know, Facebook pages. They don't do any of that. And so, you know, how do you break through that mold? Well, you got to shake their hand. You know, it really is a hustle business, and you got to build a fan base that comes back for more and seeks your work out. It's why it's so fucking hard. It really is difficult, you know, because, you know, I do 15, 20 shows a year. I do another 30 or 40 appearances at comic book stops and Barnes & Nobles and various places. And it's a hustle game. You know, you're out there hustling your stuff on a constant basis. And it's a little easier if you get on an iconic book, but those things don't always translate to creator owned. I see it all the time where people will go write X-Men for 4 years, and then they'll try to launch a creator owned book, and no one cares.
Yeah. Right. Or vice versa, you'll see somebody who smash an ass on a creator-owned book and then jump over to the big two, and it's like a plane into a fucking mountain, you know what I'm saying? So it's interesting.
Yeah. No, and here's the thing. There's no right or wrong way to do it. I mean, and this is what I always tell people. I said, if you want to write a comic. Pay for it yourself and do it. I mean, here's the thing. The barrier to entry of being a comic book writer or being a comic book artist is very low. You go and set up an account on Tapas or Tapastic or whatever the fuck they're calling it now, Line Webtoon, and you start posting shit, you know, and boom, you're a comic book creator. Now, whether you're actually going to ever make money on that is a whole different subject, you know, yes. And that's where when I say how many people professionally do this as a career, there's about 300 that are writers. I think there's about 1,500 that are artists. So there's a lot more artists than there are writers, because most of the established writers in the business write 4 or 5 books. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, and each one of those, that's the nice thing about being a writer, is you can write multiple titles, you know? And that's the other thing. If you're serious about being a comic book writer, you need to put out 2 or 3 books a month, because people will forget about you very quickly. Mm-hmm. You've got to have a constant churn. You got to get your name out there. You got to hustle. You know, that's why I always tell people it is a fucking hustle game.
Right. It is. I was telling my wife, like, it's like running for office. Like, you're going to cons, you're shaking hands, you're kissing babies, you're making friends. Like, you want people to genuinely have an experience when they meet you. You don't want them walking away from your table going, oh, that was all right. You want them to be fucking wow, because you're like part carnival barker here. You know what I'm saying? Right. You're an artist and you're a carnival barker.
That's, you got to make that connection.
Yeah.
That's what we've always been talking about. Like, make a connection with somebody, make a friend. Like, even if they don't buy anything, you know, it doesn't matter if they buy it, because the con might be 3 days.
I'm telling you, you're like a prop comic. You're just pulling all kinds of stuff out of the place.
One sec.
Awesome.
Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes. We certainly can.
I had cat trauma there.
So. I saw that.
Jumped in my face. I was attacked by my cat. No, you know, I always say, you know, the thing is, if people don't, here's the problem with anything really, is we're in this sort of real-time culture now, and people want things now. It's why marketing is so difficult, because let's say I run a Facebook ad for something, and they don't have a way to immediately click and buy it. They're going to forget about it, because there's 5,000 other things that are going to hit them before the thing actually comes out. why I'm a believer in sort of blitzkrieg advertising when a product is available. You know, you have to advertise to the retailer first to get it in the store, to get sell in, and then you get sell through. You've got to do some sort of blitzkrieg. And so we do a lot of Facebook ads when stuff is available, but always have a call to action. You need someone to be able to buy something.
Yes.
And at conventions specifically, and see, this is where the industry is broken into two things. People that don't know shit don't want to pay for it. You know, I think about anything, a movie. If they've not heard of you, they've not heard of the title, the chance of them buying something from you is zero.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it really is. I mean, how hard is it to sell something to someone if they don't know who you are, they don't know who the book is, they don't know who the artist is? There's just so much other stuff out there.
Right.
So what I do, and I've been doing this for years, is particularly for a three-day show, I will go and I will give out something for free on Friday, and I specifically look for people with three-day badges, and I'll give them a free comic. Like, it's why I printed the Think Tank image first. I printed up 20,000 of those, and I've been giving those out for 3 years now. And so what I do is I'll bring two or three cases of those to a show. All day Friday, I'll just hand them out to people. I won't even try to hard sell anyone. I'll just say, hey, you know, you're going to be here all weekend. When you get stuck in a line, when you sit down to grab your burger, give this a read. Take 10, 15 minutes. Come back and let me know what you think. Soft sell. You know, you gave them something, soft sell. And then what happens is, you know, 5-10% of those people stroll back over the course of the weekend, and some of them will just chat me up, some of them buy shit. And yeah. And usually the people that really like it to come back, I'll sell all five volumes, you know,
that's
and that's
great.
Like boom.
Yeah.
$70 sale, you know?
Yeah.
You get 50 of those, it's a good con.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Hell yeah. So, that's awesome.
But so, once you have someone that's a hardcore fan, you need to be able to monetize them. That's the other part of the equation. That's where the hardcovers come in, like Aphrodite 9 and Sunstone, we have the hardcovers. And that's where those are $50 to $100 because the fan, when they're a serious fan, they want something cool that they can put on their bookshelf.
Yes.
Right. So the other question I was going to ask is, don't you have a degree in science too? So do you have a
science? I have a master's in physics. I have an undergraduate in physics applied science, and I have a master's in physics.
God, you got so much stuff. It's
so awesome. Think Tank for you is basically like a biography. Like this is your dream. This is your dream life. Like you're like, this is what I wanted to feel. Fuck it, well, I'm going to make it a comic book.
Yeah. You know, I was working on my, I was actually in the master's program at UCLA when Image started and when I got that job, and I had another year to go. And my life kind of sucked. And I met Rob because my nephew, I didn't read comics actually. My nephew was a comic reader, 13 years younger than me. And he said, will you take me to this Mile High Comics signing opening where Rob Liefeld's going to be? I'm like, who's Rob Liefeld? And so you know, I didn't know who he was. I didn't know who Tom DeFalco was.
Commercial.
I didn't know that either. I didn't know Jim Lee was. I didn't know who Wills was. I didn't know who Mark Silvestri. I didn't know who any of these guys were. I did not read comics at all. And I grew up on Asimov and, you know, and Arthur C. Clarke. And those were the people I read. Piers Anthony, you know, and McCaffrey. Those are my Watership Down. Who was that?
Watership Down.
Adams, right?
Yeah, I think you're Adams? Right.
I don't remember, but I think the movie.
I could go look. I love that movie.
That was the first full length book I ever read. I read that when I was 8, I think.
Wow.
And no, but I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. What were we talking about?
Not how you didn't read comics and how you met all these fucking comic superstars, and then you just jumped right into comics from UCLA.
No, my nephew made me go to the signing, and I drove him down there, and we were in this three-hour line. I didn't have any idea it was going to be a three-hour line. That's some Saturday. And so we get down to the front. You know, my life kind of sucked at that point, honestly. I was in the lab 30 hours a week. I was studying another 20, 30 hours a week, and I was working at a bank to pay for school another 30, 40 hours a week. So, you know, 70, 80, 90 hours a week, that's a full week, you know. And so when I got up to the front of this line, man, there were these young, good-looking guys. They had some cute chicks with them. And I'm like, fuck, this is for me. And no, you know what it was? Right in front of me the entire time of the line that I was in for 3 hours was this guy named Cedric Nocon. And he's an artist, was one of the early Image artists. He showed his portfolio to Rob right in front of me. And Rob hired him on the spot.
Wow.
And I just happened to be the very next guy. And I was sort of, I almost wistfully said, hey, I can't draw, but you looking for anyone else? And he's like, yeah, Rob's like, looked at me and he's like, we're looking for someone that can do letters, pages, and write press releases. Can you do that? And I'm like, yes, I can.
There you go. You bullshitted your way into the comics industry.
I did. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I went, I went to Crown Books, I think it was. I don't know if those exist anymore. And I bought a book called How to Write a Press Release. And I read it. I wrote up a press release that night about the event that he just had at Mile High Comics. I faxed it to him the next day. He asked me to come in the next day and hired me.
Wow.
That's great. That's crazy.
That's amazing. And then look, and that's 25 years ago, 1,000 comics later, and here
crazy, you are. Huh?
That's amazing.
It is crazy. I tell people all the time that the universe will knock a couple times with crazy shit for you. And the question is, do you have the balls to step through that door and take advantage of that opportunity, or are you just going to let it pass? I think that happens to everyone. And people sometimes don't even realize it. You know, I mean, I could have very easily not said anything and just had my nephew sign his book. I didn't have anything. I was just accompanying my younger, he was 13, I think, at the time, you know. Wow. No, he was younger than that. He's like 9, you know. So I think I was 23. And yeah, so, you know, it's just weird. And that's happened to me a few times where I saw that there was an opportunity for something and I jumped on it. You know, it's worked out most of the time.
That's awesome. So my friend Robert, who works for Rogues Portal, has we asked if anybody had any questions. So he sent 5 questions. So I'm going to ask one.
Ask the best one. Then we'll let him go, because we've been on for a while with him.
Okay. Just the best one?
The best one. Ask him the best one.
He sent 5 of them, though.
Are they all follow-ups?
Yeah, but they're quick ones. And previous interviews. You've talked about how on the early days of Image as an account, you saved upwards of $50,000 by cutting off the AC. What made you transition from being the accountant CFO and want to be a comics writer?
I was never the CFO. That's kind of I was an editor. At that point, I was an editor, and Rob Liefeld was using his sister, Sherry, as his business manager / accountant. And then he fired her and he said, "Hey, Matt, you're good with math, right?" Because he knew I was a physics guy. And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Hey, can you take a look at these books?" And I'm like, "What do you mean, like accounting work?" I'd never looked at accounting books before in my life at that point. It never had happened. And so I just popped in, and I think they used Peachtree back then. And I figured out how to use Peachtree. I went in and looked at the numbers, and I started asking a million questions. And I saw that the air conditioning story is a famous one, because I saw this HVAC line that was like $10,000 a month. And I'm like, "What the fuck is HVAC? and Rob was like, "I have no idea." He's like, "Can you call the landlord and ask?" So I called the landlord, and his landlord was like, "Yeah, that's the air conditioning surcharge, because you guys work at night and your guys at night flip the air conditioning on. So it turns the air conditioning on for the whole floor." And I'm like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" And the landlord was like, "No, you guys have been doing this for years." So I walked out into the goddamn bullpen. I said, "Hey, fucktards, no more turning on the AC at night." You know, I ripped the switch off the wall. And so no one was able to flip the AC on all night. Suddenly we were saving $10,000 a month.
So you saved Image Comics with this, by saving $10,000. None of this stuff would be here if you turn off the air conditioner. That's amazing.
No, it's just a stupid story. It really is a model of what the problem of early Image Comics was none of us knew what the fuck we were doing.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, we were all thrown into this immediate success. We were very young and brash and arrogant, and everything we did sold. I mentioned Lady Pendragon. You know, I'm happy when Think Tank sells 10,000 copies. Lady Pendragon number one sold 700,000 copies.
What the fuck?
So that first book I ever wrote sold 700,000 copies.
What did you do with all the money?
I bought a house. You know,
that's awesome. Amazing.
At least you did something smart with the money. That's great.
Very responsible of you. How old were you when that book came out?
I was 25.
You didn't buy like a mountain of Coke and like a Ferrari? Like, this is the best shit ever.
No, I you know, fortunately for me, I had seen in the 2 years prior, I'd seen several guys make a lot of money and piss it away. It was sort of a cautionary tale for me. I saw Dan Frege and make a bunch of money and piss it away. I saw a couple of the guys do the same thing. And I don't think I would have pissed it away. I might have bought a Ferrari, but I did buy a Porsche. I had a Porsche Boxster. So I had that, and it was kind of fun. It is, to my consternation internally, the most money I've ever made in my life was when I was 25.
That's awesome. You know what, though? So, I bet you had a really fun time.
Okay.
It was nice.
Question 2. Guys like you and Neal Stephenson, the sci-fi author, fascinate me. You have no formal training in writing, but are some of the best storytellers I've ever read. What about storytelling interests you, and why is telling your story via comics the best way for you to do that?
That's funny, Neal Stephenson. I idolize that guy. I honestly don't know how to answer that question. I grew up in the editorial system, like the Extreme, and I saw sort of books. And problem with Extreme for me early on was I was an editor for a lot of those books, but I didn't actually like a lot of the content they were doing. I never was a superhero guy. It's nothing. I'm not saying they were bad books, but I personally do not like superheroes. I'm not a fan of them. I think they're kind of silly. Right. And I think Marvel and DC sort of own the spandex set, so why not try to do something different? You know, if you look at what I do, it's all sci-fi, it's, thrillers, it's crime dramas, it's sex stories. You know, I mean, I'm doing other shit now. I'm not doing superheroes. It's 25 years of being in this industry. You know, I studied the format. I studied it. I wrote a lot of stuff that was bad to get to the stuff that was good. I have a hard time reading anything I wrote. Even a couple of years ago, I read stuff I wrote. I'm like, oh my God, it's constant evolution.
That's what I was saying. I told a friend of mine, I said, if you go back and you read your first script, and if you like it, you're not growing as a writer. You should instantly kind of go, oh man, this is kind of bad. So that's interesting that you say something like that, because you're always growing. You're always moving. You should always be moving forward. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I like it when people agree with me. That's awesome.
I don't think I've disagreed with you yet. So, you know, I think the biggest thing I've learned in comics is economy of word, brevity. You know, I mean, if you go back and look at my Lady Pendragon stuff, it is verbose. I mean, I use a lot of narrative and think tank, but that's kind of intentional and specific to that title. A lot of the other titles I write have a lot less dialogue and balloons, because it is a visual medium and you need to let the art speak for itself. The biggest thing I hate in comics, I see this all the time in indie comics, is when the writer describes what's already in the art. You know, like if here's this book. Exactly. That shit drives me fucking nuts, because I'm like, you don't need to say that. And it's just a waste of space and words. And with the limited space you have, every word counts.
Interesting. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on. We can't thank you enough. I would listening to you talk, man, I would follow you through a goddamn brick wall. Like, you got me fired up from comics, buddy. This is awesome.
You know? No, dude, I love what I do. I love life. You know, I love my wife, love my kids, love my animals, love where I live. I'm a really happy guy, actually.
Positive. But your energy, man, and like your vibe is just infectious, dude.
You've got a positive vibe, man.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch. It's very cool, man. And congratulations to all the success. 25 years, thousands of comics. That's amazing. Oh,
crazy, huh?
And if you have time to come back again, we'd love to have you back again, maybe after I just saw that Golgotha shipped. So
yeah, anytime, you guys. I'd love to talk about that stuff. Any individual projects you want to get me on, or Brian Hill's, it would be a great guest for you, too, because that guy, I'm a science nerd. He's a psychology nerd.
Perfect. That's fantastic. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on the Word Bros. We really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thanks for your time, sir.
Awesome. Take care, guys.
That was Matt Hawkins. That dude was amazing.
Yes.
It was funny because before the interview, Kevin and I were like, all right, well, what are we going to talk to him about? What are we going to ask him? What are we going to do? And we really didn't have to do anything.
Because he's very entertaining and he has a lot of stories. And he's been doing this for a really long time, guys.
So. I told Kevin, it reminded me of the Neal Adams panel that I did at Tidewater Comic Con, where I was like, man, what am I going to talk to Neal Adams about? I didn't say shy. I just said, ladies and gentlemen, Neal Adams. And he just talked for 45 minutes.
And it was really easy to get with, to ask him questions. And there's some good tidbits of information in there for you guys. Yeah. Like, he's got a lot of good advice about doing comics. Just do comics was one of his. We've been saying that since episode one.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's cool too, because like you said, the Top Cow talent hunt thing is coming up. And if you're interested in doing that, if you get your script in early, you will actually get feedback on your script. And my main man, Mike Exner, who I'd like to have on the pod later. I've known Mike for a really long time. He's a really great dude. He's been making comics fucking forever, just grinding it out. He did the talent hunt last year, and he got actual feedback.
That's really nice of them to do.
Yeah, they don't have to do that shit.
There's a lot of time that goes into that. That's very nice of them. And although he was saying, you know, he does that nicer person, he is a very nice guy. He's like, we just caught him on a feisty night. I would say that that's relatively true because he's always been really nice in our online interactions. And he is just a generally warm and friendly guy. There's a lot of laughter in that pod, a lot of positivity in the room.
Yeah. And he plays D&D, which is perfect. I mean,
which we were nerding out on after and before the pod.
Yeah, we were like, all right, dude, that was really great. Thanks. And he was like, hey, you want to talk more about D&D? And that's the first thing he brought up. And he said, you know, I feel like I learned how to tell stories because I was a DM forever. So, I mean, that's awesome. And he's not the first guy. I actually heard Jon Favreau, the director of Iron Man and Jumanji and all that shit. He actually said that he became a better storyteller because of playing Dungeons and Dragons as a kid, because it's all in your head, man. It's all in your head. Yeah, that's cool. Well, good. That was really great, man. And he was fucking great. And I don't even really think we need to do much more than that.
So. No, we had a great pod. Thank you guys for listening. Once again, we are the Word Bros. Word Bros.
Yeah, dude, that was awesome. And I told him, and during the podcast, I told Kevin, I would fucking follow that dude off a goddamn cliff. Like, he was just, he got you fired up. And if you're not fired up for doing comics, and if you want to do this and you hear that interview and you don't realize how simple of a task it is to get started, then you just don't want to do it. I think that's fair.
Like he said, it might be harder for you to break in, but if you stick with anything, I think that there, with enough time and enough of you doing it, you'll eventually get to where you want to be.
Yeah.
So you just got to keep on trying. So thank you guys for listening. What'd you say?
I said, and that was awesome.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. As always. Well, I hate when people say as always, because I can't change who I am. So this week I'm Kevin, next week I'm not.
You're getting too deep on me, bro. We'll talk to you guys next week.
You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast, thewordbros.com.